Welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, also affectionately known as WUF. My name is Kim Transier. My pronouns are she and her, and it is my privilege to serve as your lay leader today. Your order of service came as an email this morning. Attached to that, you'll find announcements of upcoming WUF events. We want you to know that you are welcome here. No matter your age, abilities, or the color of your skin, you are welcome here no matter whom you love or how you speak, whatever spiritual beliefs you have held or flags you have flown, and whether you come with an abundance of joy or a broken heart, you are welcome here.
Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another.
We Are Not Responsible by Harriet Mullen. We are not responsible for your lost or stolen relatives. We cannot guarantee your safety if you disobey our instructions. We do not endorse the causes or claims of people begging for handouts. We reserve the right to refuse service to anyone. Your ticket does not guarantee that we will honor your reservation. In order to facilitate our procedures, please limit your carrying on. Before taking off, please extinguish all smoldering resentments. If you cannot understand English, you will be moved out of the way. In the event of a loss, you'd better look out for yourself. Your insurance was canceled because we can no longer handle your frightful claims. Our handlers lost your luggage, and we are unable to find the key to your legal case. You were detained for interrogation because you fit the profile. You are not presumed to be innocent if the police have reason to suspect you are carrying a concealed wallet. It's not our fault you were born wearing a gang color. It is not our obligation to inform you of your rights. Step aside, please, while our officer inspects your bad attitude. You have no rights we are bound to respect. Please remain calm, or we can't be held responsible for what happens to you.
Thou who holds us in compassion, who ignites our hearts with care and love, remind us we are worthy. Remind us that we are enough. Hold our hearts and our spirits and our bodies with such gentleness and such love. Let us hold ourselves and everyone around us with such gentleness and such love. Hold us when we and our families are hurt by racism, oppression, corporate capitalism, a government that chooses to dominate rather than care. Forgive us for not remembering the pain of others, how they suffer when our lives are comfortable, how often they suffer to make our lives comfortable. Hold us in our fear. These are uncertain, rocky, difficult times. What is the world now, and what will it become? Bless us with compassion, with hearts on fire for justice, for love. Bless us with compassion. When I watch the protests across the United States and the world, I feel a speechless, amazed awe. I feel gratitude. I feel humbled. People are rising. Young people, black people, people of color, indigenous people, people of faith, outraged people. I see power in pictures of people tightly packed in the Portland streets and taking a knee on the Morrison Street Bridge and covering the Burnside Bridge with fallen bodies, chanting, "We can't breathe." I revel in the pictures of the filled streets of Minneapolis, New York, Los Angeles, Seattle, London, and the packed streets of all sorts of smaller places, Helena, Montana, Friday Harbor, Washington, Idaho Falls, Idaho, Albany, Oregon, Paducah, Kentucky, Alliance, Ohio, Tyler, Texas, and so many more. People flow through their towns and cities powerful, like rivers, like seas, like the ocean. They stop traffic and freeways. They send cities, counties, states, police forces, political leaders of all persuasion into a panic because they are rising and they are powerful. They bring their bodies, fragile bodies, easily trampled, easily broken, easily choked, and easily infected. They bring their eyes that burn when police poison them with a gas so painful and so dangerous it is outlawed by the Geneva Convention. They bring their skin that bruises when hit by clubs and rubber bullets. They come one person, five people, 10 people, 100, 200, 1,000, 10,000, 100,000. They defy curfews and stay-at-home orders, and they come night after night. They bring their endurance to walk and stand and cry out their rage for hours at a time. Their message? They want to have no more terror, no more police terror in their communities, says Patrice Cullors, a co-founder of Black Lives Matters. Everybody wants to be apologized to. Everybody wants to be told, "I'm sorry. What I did was wrong. It was unacceptable. We won't do it again. In fact, this is how we change." But grieving communities often don't receive that kind of apology or acknowledgement, she continues. We barely get a sorry, we barely get accountability, and we never get change. So what are people to do? We are seeing all across the country, says Joanne Hardesty, the Black City of Portland commissioner, is that people have just come to the end of their rope. There is no faith that our system will ever work as it was intended, as it should be intended, for all people. It's never worked for Black folks, and it's not working for Black people today. Years ago, I went to General Assembly in Phoenix, Arizona. It was a social justice General Assembly. We were protesting the injustice against immigrants and Latinx people in Arizona. During the opening ceremonies, many leaders from local immigrant and Latinx organizations spoke about their lives. It was the first time that I learned that in some Latinx neighborhoods, people lived under police surveillance. There were checkpoints, constant patrolling, and flyovers by aircraft. I later learned that this was true in many predominantly Black neighborhoods across the country as well. What someone said during one of those speeches has stayed with me ever since. It won't be the well-meaning white progressives who start the revolution. It will be the people at the bottom because they have nothing to lose. One day, the police brutality and surveillance, the lack of jobs and health care and housing will mean that there is nothing left to lose. and you can't keep pretending that there will be. You can't work hard, be a decent human being, love your family, and be safe. You have to work during a pandemic or get fired. Perhaps you work in a work packing place or in a nursing home or a prison where infection rates are high. Or maybe a person you love is in prison for something minor like selling marijuana, and suddenly COVID-19 makes that a possible death sentence. Or you're one of the people who lost your job. Did you know 50% of working Black people lost their jobs in the last 2 months? 50%. So you can't get medical care. Food is scarce. Eviction inevitable. There is no safety. You could go jogging and be attacked and killed. You could be sleeping in your bed and killed by the police. You could have a cell phone in your pocket. You could be reaching for your car registration, and you could die. You could buy something at a store and be reported for passing counterfeit money, which may or may not have been true, and then murdered by a police officer, while three others who were committed to stopping crimes like murders looked on. There is no safety. All the complaints and the protests and the lawsuits and the actions and the voter drives and the sustained efforts at police reform and training over decades did nothing to stop the murder of George Floyd. It did not mean that the man who killed him was immediately arrested. It took protests to make that happen. And it took a week and a half to arrest and charge the other three officers, even with hundreds and thousands of people across the world demanding such action. "Being Black in America, you're already born dead," said a young Black protester in Portland. "Do I feel safe? No, not really. Part of that not feeling safe is why a lot of us are coming out and doing this reckless stuff, endangering our lives and protesting. We're already not safe." There is nothing left to lose. Is this the revolution? Who can really know? Progress towards a justice in the world for all people is often so slow. During the civil rights movement, police brutality against Black people was sickening and obvious and drove people to protest in the streets. Today, police brutality against Black people is sickening and obvious, and it has driven people to the streets. That police brutality, its purpose is domination. It's not a mistake that dominate is President Trump's new favorite word. State-sponsored domination of Black people and other people of color has always been the point. It is no wonder that in the day or two just after George Floyd's death, that the Reverend Bill Sinkford, the minister at First Unitarian here in Portland, and a Black man who came of age in the 1960s, wrote of hopelessness. I have shared some of his words with you before, and I share some of them again here, because I believe they are so important in this moment for all of us as we struggle to find a way forward. "The challenge," Sinkford writes, "is not to punish one white officer in one city for one act of violence. We," that would be all of us, "need to face the truth that so much of the structure of the world we know is built on a commitment to maintain the racial hierarchy. We must face it if we want any chance of changing it." I repeat what he says. We need to face the truth that so much of the structure of the world is built on the commitment to racial hierarchy. We see it in our communities. We see it in our economic system. We see it in health disparities, particularly in this pandemic. And we see it in modern policing. In Black, Indigenous, and Latinx communities, policing keeps subjects under control. It humiliates. It destroys. Modern policing was created to keep slaves under control and protect the property of the wealthy. This is mostly still how it functions. When Black people smoke pot, they go to prison. When white kids in fraternities smoke pot, absolutely nothing happens. When Black people drive, they are stopped and their cars are searched. When white people drive, nothing happens. When a Black person steals, they go to prison. When the wealthy steal through white-collar crime, changing taxation codes, the taking of public lands, and through labor laws, the police do nothing. Sinkford goes on in his essay, the words of the prophet James Baldwin. Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. We must face the truth, Sinkford says, be present to it, visit the depression and the hopelessness. This is part of the truth I must know. That is part of the truth I invite you to know in yourself, if that truth is present in you, or through me and other people of color, if that is as close to the truth as you can approach. If you are a Black person or an Indigenous person or a person of color, you know all of this. And I am so sorry. I am so sorry it has taken so many well-meaning white people so long to work this out. I'm sorry we sometimes notice and see what's happening, and then we forget. And I commit to you to not forgetting and to trying to change things. If you are white, I am asking you to be present to this truth about our society. It is built on the commitment to maintain the racial hierarchy. If you are white, this can be so incredibly difficult to believe. When I first heard that Latinx communities were under surveillance, I actually just literally thought it was a lie. How could that be true in America? I learned otherwise. White people and people of color live in different countries in the same United States. One thing Black people often complain about is that when they tell their experience, white people don't believe them. White people tell them they are mistaken, that they are followed in the store, that the job or apartment vacancy vanished when they showed their face, that the officer pulled them over to see if the nice car belonged to them, or just whatever their experience of police domination is. White people tend to think they know how life really is based on their experience and often just correct people of color. It is a white supremacist culture thing. White people learn to do that. And I really don't think anyone should be ashamed about this if you've ever done it. However, it is worth noticing if you are white, if you do it, are tempted to do it, and start changing that behavior now. Black communities and Latinx communities really do live under police surveillance. Police treat them fundamentally differently than they treat white people. So I ask you, if you are white, believe people of color when they share their experience. Learn from their experience about what our country really is. Will this time be different? People ask of these protests. Protests have happened before, in the 60s, at Ferguson. Will these protests really cause the changes that matter? And long-term activists are saying this really feels different to them. More people than ever before are involved in protesting and expressing distress at police brutality against Black people. 57% of Americans believe that this is a real problem, up from just 30% during the Ferguson protests. And that is an extraordinary change. People's hearts are breaking open. People who never really thought about police violence are suddenly paying attention. Even conservative commentators have expressed alarm. Newburgh, Oregon, held their first protest of any kind in their entire history of being a town, and 300 people showed up, and it was led by young Black leaders. Changes are happening just now, in the last week. In some communities, police officers have actually really been held accountable and fired for violence that was taped during protests. Minnesota just banned chokeholds by police, which seems extraordinary that that was allowed previously. Portland Public Schools are removing police officers. There's a bipartisan effort to shut down the Pentagon weapon program that transfers military equipment to local law enforcement departments. Los Angeles just decided to cut $100 to $150 million from the police budget and reinvest it into communities, one of the demands of activists. They shut down their gang database and will take sharper discipline against abusive cops, beginning immediately. Ordinary people are hearing ideas about defunding the police and police abolition for the very first time, getting these concepts and ideas into the public conversation. We are asking, what really makes us safe? What if having a mental health break was met by a trained team who could defuse the situation and get that person help instead? What if someone having a drug reaction was taken somewhere they could confront their drug addiction instead of going to jail? Are we really safer when watched over by people who are trained to keep control through the threat of violence and actual violence? Why do we think that makes us safe? Will these protests change our society's commitment to the racial hierarchy? It could very well help more people recognize the hierarchy and admit that it is real. Changing that commitment is a much longer and harder road. That means completely dismantling white supremacist culture, something everyone who was born in this country was born into. It formed us. Dismantling it is difficult, confusing, and painful work. Now, though, is a really powerful moment to step into that work. People, so many people, are rising, powerful, like rivers and sea, and they are saying, this is enough. They are making people in positions of authority really uncomfortable. So what can we do? Protest, if we can. If we can't go to the streets, make phone calls to local, state, and federal politicians and policymakers. Follow the lead of Black activists and their demands for creating a safer society. Many of these policies and ideas are well thought out in detailed lists that you can read, including demands made of the Portland police. Just imagine the crashing waves of people on the street, mirrored by crashing waves of phone calls and emails and letters. 1, 5, 10, 100, 200, 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, a million, making demands for change. The force of people matters. Our power matters. George Floyd died because his ability to take a breath was stopped by a boot. It is our breathing that connects us each to each other and all of life. Breathing is what enables our voice. With it, we are able to speak what matters. We can breathe in peace. We can breathe out love over and over until we live where everyone matters and everyone can thrive. May it be so. I'm going to share for my benediction the same words that I used last week. They've really been words that I've been holding on to, and they're by the UU minister, the Reverend Wayne Arneson. Take courage, friends. The way is often hard. The path is never clear, and the stakes are very high. Take courage, for deep down there is another truth. You are not alone.